Welcome to episode 105 of Atelier Talk, a podcast where we explore art and, most importantly, the journey that leads to it. We offer glimpses directly into the studios to inspire, to encourage, and yes, maybe sometimes simply to satisfy curiosity. This podcast features fascinating people and covers a wide range of topics about creating, showcasing, and of course, selling art. I am Stephanie Hullmann, an artist myself, and with this podcast, I invite you to join me in my conversations as I navigate my own path in the art world. Today in this conversation, I introduced a guest who has been a guiding light for many in the art community. Margaret Petry is the wonderful person and the insightful voice behind the successful art podcast, Authentic Obsessions, where she delves into the paths and the works of so many creative minds and encourages and enriches her listeners. Through her work as a podcaster, she has found a new passion and works now as an artist coach. Already through her podcast, she has touched the lives of so many artists by helping them to uncover their why through all those beautiful questions that she asks in her interviews. And now she helps artists to navigate the often winding road of the artist journey. Margaret joins us from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, bringing with her a wealth of experience and a deep understanding of what it means to truly live a creative life and what is at the base of this creative life. I first met Margaret when she interviewed me for her podcast, Authentic Obsessions, and today I have the pleasure of turning the tables. We'll explore the foundations of what drives us as artists, the role of setting goals that resonate with our true selves, and the base of it all. So settle in and join us as we embark on our conversation, which I, as usual, started with a question. I asked Margaret if she is an artist, and please wait with me for her answer.
I shouldn't hesitate at all. I should say, yes, absolutely. Yes, I am an artist. You know, my husband a long time ago used to call me an artist of everyday life, and it took me a while to understand what he meant by that. But I think part of it has to do with maybe the lens through which I see the world and my inclination to try everything and dabble. My hesitation comes from saying, well, I guess I'm an artist, but all the things we tell ourselves, but I didn't go to art school, but I'm not practicing professionally, but I'm not in exhibits right now, but you know, all those things. But I have done all those things. My journey has been long and winding, but I think I've always done some sort of creative pursuit. And I think anyone who does a creative pursuit is allowed to call themselves an artist, which is almost everyone. I don't think enough people call themselves artists.
Yeah, I agree. I was wondering what you would say. What would you say is your main art today?
Today, two things. One, my atypical art is the podcast that I produce, like you. Maybe you find this. But when I started doing the podcast, I realized that I didn't have a lot of time for collaging, painting, the things that I was doing creatively at the same time, because I still had a full-time job and something had to give. And after about a year or so, I thought, you know, the podcast feeds me the same way that making collages fed me.
Wow.
Yeah. It was sort of like going to a private exhibit every week, because every time I got to talk to a new artist with a new art form, I wasn't taking a class and I wasn't creating the work that they were creating, but I got this inside look and it triggered something in my brain that made me think about other things, which is what happens when I make art, right? When I make art, I get in this flow, time goes away, and I'm making a tangible product that other people can view or buy or appreciate or recognize. And the same thing was happening With the podcast, I was making a tangible product. I was putting something out in the universe that no one else did. Your podcast does the same thing. You and I have different people on it. We have different questions we ask. But I'm curious if you feel the same way about your podcast as what I just noted.
Actually, this is a new perspective on my own podcast. The podcast has changed my life. I'm absolutely sure. I see you nodding.
Yes.
Amazing. The things I've learned, the people I've met, the new perspectives I've gained, so much has changed. But to me, my art is on one side, and I'm alone in my studio working on my art. And the podcast is my lifeline to the people. I get to meet people, I connect, I can exchange ideas and listen new things, but I've never viewed it as a piece of art. But in a way, you're absolutely right, because what is art? Art is something that we make and express in our ways. And even if we had the same people in our podcast, even if we interviewed the exact same person, maybe we should try that someday. Our questions, our approach would be different, which is an expression of our art. So yeah, I agree. I agree. Yeah. That's a new way to look at it. Thank you.
So, and then on the flip side of that, the actual creative thing that I'm doing here is I've been quilting, and I've been doing that for the past couple of years. I bought my very first sewing machine. I just started stitching fabric together from old clothing, things I found at a thrift store, vintage shop, old linen pants I had that didn't fit anymore, you know, that were so beautiful, I didn't want to give them away. And then I also have clothing from my mother. When she passed away at 100 years old, she had worn for several decades the same blue and white, like cotton and linen shirts and skirts and denim, and everything was blue and white. And they weren't threadbare, because she took very good care of everything, but they were thin and soft, and they're her. And so I took some of her clothes and incorporated them into some of the quilts that I have made. So that's really special to me too. And I like the tactile piece of fabric. I also like collaging. In fact, on Saturday, I took a whole day workshop with my friend Mel Kolstad, who taught at a Hamilton wood type museum. So we did letterpress printing in the morning, and then in the afternoon, we used our prints to do collage. And that was really fun, because I hadn't done something like that in a long time. So as long as I can use my hands a little bit, and I love what you said about the podcast brings you together with other people, and your art is more of a solitary piece of work that you do. And when I tried to be an artist, that sounds funny, but I started renting studio space outside of my house. And every time I rented a space, I was disappointed, because what I wanted was some, not even collaboration, but some people to talk to, some people to see, some other artists to learn from. And it wasn't like that at all. People came and went at all different times of day, and everyone pretty much stayed in their studio space and did their work, which is what artists do, right? You have to stay in your studio space and do your work. So it was clear to me that I needed something different, and that maybe my creativity wasn't driven by making a painting to sell. It was driven by being around other people who were making paintings to sell. And that part was so important to me to drive my creativity. So I found that by doing the podcast.
That's interesting. I really, really like that. Why is creating so important to you? Before we get into the coaching part, I would like to know a little bit more about your path. Was it important in your family? Is it part of your life ever since you remember?
Yeah, you know, I ask that question of my guests too, and everyone always has. I always drew, or when I was in third grade, I won a contest, or my mother was a painter, or they had these really solid stories. Do you know what I mean? And I always thought I didn't have a story like that at all. And then I realized that my mom always was making something. It wasn't in any way fine art. Although, you know what? It's funny. My dad painted at one point before I don't even think I was born, but I have a couple oil paintings of his. They're not great, but you know, but he did that, which is kind of funny. I forgot about that. But my mom would make note cards. She had a volunteer job mending library books, and so she had all of these old books that couldn't be repaired anymore, like children's books. So she would tear pictures out from the picture books, and she made Christmas cards, she made note tags, and her hands were always busy. She liked to knit. She didn't really sew, but she knitted a lot. Do you know what hooked rug making is?
Yeah.
We went through a period of that. So, like, there was always some crafty thing happening. I remember having a Spirograph when I was a kid.
Yeah, I did too. So it's
Yeah.
somehow in your genes, you
It's
think?
somehow in my genes. And it wasn't until I think after I had Duncan that I was allowed to paint and finger paint and do crafty things with my child that I really got into it again. And I watched the glee on his face and I watched him. Like all kids do, right? They have no judgment about what they're doing. It's just free and pure joy. And I found that again, I think, after I had my son.
That's exciting. That, I mean, that's what we all try to do, right? Get back to creating as if being a child, not looking at the result, but at the process. But it's so difficult. Did you go to art school?
No, not at all. No, I have a degree in speech communication. I have a master's degree in education, and I've taken 100 workshops and one day classes around all different kinds of art at museums, at community centers, at retreat centers. And I think I like doing that because you get to meet so many different people. You know, it's funny. I'm thinking about all the different workshops I went to, and I don't really even remember what I made at those places, but I do remember some of the people that I met and their stories, why they were there, how they got into it. That's really interesting.
That's interesting. That's maybe the base of
Huh.
your podcast, right?
Yeah.
So your day job was not in the arts. You did something totally different, right?
Yes.
And you had your son and you remembered creating. So explain to us, how did you suddenly start the idea of starting a podcast? Because I think that the podcast got you into coaching, right?
Yes, for sure.
So the podcast is somehow at the roots of all this new path. How did you start? Why did you want to have a podcast and it's called Authentic Obsessions? How did you find that name, that wonderful name?
Oh boy, the name. That took a long time. I thought about starting a podcast about a year before I actually did it. And my idea was that I would go to people's studios, and this was after I kept renting the studio space, right? And I thought everyone has such interesting stories. And also, I love to see the inside of people's studios. So, my idea was that I would go and interview people in their studios and take a bunch of pictures so that I could show everyone studio spaces because, you know, the magazines that come out and you get to see everyone's studio spaces. I just love that. So, that was probably, I don't know, fall of 2019. And I hemmed and hawed and I was working full time. And I thought, this is so much work. I don't know if I could do this. And then in January or February of 2020, I signed up for a podcasting class with Seth Godin. And I think it's called the Podcasting Fellowship. I can't remember. And one of the reasons I chose it was because he says very clearly at the outset that if your goal is to make a lot of money doing your podcast, this isn't for you. If your goal is to be in a class with me, this isn't for you. He was very transparent about what it was and what it wasn't that he was offering. It was like boot camp. It went on for 12 weeks, and every day, 5 days a week, you had a new assignment. And I'm talking like one day you had to come up with your title. Day two, you had to come up with your description. Day three, you talked about podcasting equipment. Day four, you talked about your audience. I mean, you didn't have a week to come up with a title, and you were put in these very small groups so you could talk about it. Well, so I think this started in February of 2020. We all know what happened in March of 2020. The world kind of shut down and half the people left the group. And I did too. And I didn't show up those last few weeks. And I thought, this is too much. I can't do this. And then in May, I think, I got a notice saying that all of the content was going to go away as of like June. So I downloaded everything I missed. I went through all the courses. And I think it was about July 1st that I recorded my first podcast. And I thought, I got to do this. Like, I'm home now. I can't go out into anybody's studio. I went to one person's studio, and then that had to stop. But the gift of that was that I got to interview people like you halfway across the world. And so it turned into a global situation as opposed to me just being around Milwaukee. And it's been incredible. I cannot believe the people I've met and the people who've referred me to the next person. And so that's been really great. What else did you ask me? Oh, how I came up with the name?
Yeah. I mean, that's the core of every artist. Artists have something they are authentically obsessed with.
Yeah. So I was listening to an artist talk by a woman named Sonia Clark, who is a fiber artist in the United States, and it was on YouTube or something. And she was talking about this thing called Your Authentic Obsession, which actually she credits J.D. Salinger, the author, for an article he wrote in the New Yorker. I think I'm getting all of that right. And he talked about this thing that is uniquely yours, that you can't stop talking about, thinking about, that winds its way through all of your work, but that is so uniquely yours that you have so much excitement around it. You can't stop thinking about it. It's just always niggling around inside your brain. And I thought, oh, authentic obsessions. That seems like it would fit. I am not a huge fan of the word authentic because I think it gets overused a lot. Become your authentic self and be authentic. And so the authenticity of the word authentic gets kind of diluted. Yeah. But the other person who talks about authenticity a lot is Brené Brown. And she talks about basically authenticity is just like showing up every day as yourself, having the courage to be vulnerable, and showing who you really are to the world. And I thought, that's what I want to hear from artists. I want to hear what's behind the work. I see work up on a wall and I think, oh, that's pretty, or oh, that looks like someplace I've been, or I can imagine the artist might have thought this when they were creating it, but I don't really know. I want to know what happens behind it. And it makes me feel more connected to the work when I know what's happening behind the work. So the podcast was an attempt to find out about not just like techniques and processes and how do you exhibit or the business of art, but be vulnerable with me and tell me what your challenges are and your obstacles are. And to show other people that they aren't alone. Like, that's my big why, I think. This is why I do the podcast, is so that when you share your story, someone else says, I connect with that. I'm sitting all alone in my studio. But oh, Stephanie just said this thing that really resonates with me. So I know I'm not crazy for feeling this way, thinking this way. And if someone connects and resonates with the work that an artist is talking about on the podcast, I've done my job. So that authentic obsession I think is really important for all of us to know. And it can change. It can be tangible. It can be intangible. It doesn't matter. And half the time people don't know what it is before they start talking to me, which is the best. It's really interesting to watch them work it out in their head while we're talking. Other times people are just absolutely sure, you know, light, color, vintage signs, like those tangible things are pretty easy. The intangible ones are really interesting too, like nostalgia or beauty or empathy. And it fits, like you can see it. Like once they talk about it, you can see it in their work and you can see how they evolve as an artist with that as a central part of their being.
And through your talks with all those artists and listening to their obsessions and paths, something must have happened that you saw in many of them where you thought, gee, they need help. I want them to be seen more, or I want these artists are wonderful and they should be more out there. Or what exactly happened through the podcast that made you decide, I want to do a coaching? What is it? You didn't only say, I start coaching today, but you went through this whole thing of getting a coaching certificate. What is it that artists lack?
Well, so first of all, I went through a program, this certificate in positive psychology, which was super interesting. Before I did the coaching certification, I did this 9-month course. And again, another boot camp thing, really. But about all kinds of interventions and things you can do to flourish. So it's about flourishing and well-being and being sort of above the neutral baseline that we all hope we're starting from, right? Mental illness, you're below the baseline, having some, you know, deep things that you need to work on. You're kind of below the baseline and you just want to get up to baseline. Traditional psychology gets you up to that neutral point, right? But for those people who are already there and they just want to flourish more and be more engaged and, you know, how can they be their best self, I guess, is really about relationships and meaning and positive emotions and engagement. And so for 9 months, I went through this program where we looked at research-based evidence about all those things that can help us flourish. So what happens in the brain when you go out in nature? What happens when you start a new habit, and how can a habit stick? And so what are the pieces that help that? Or so anyway, so I did that. And then the Flourishing Center, which is where I did this, they also offered a coaching certification. And so for a couple months, I overlapped with the coaching and the positive psychology and my job and the podcast. It got a little crazy there. I had to stop the podcast for a little bit. So I went through this coaching program and I kept thinking I had to choose between my job and coaching or my job and the podcast. And it took me way longer than it should have to see how closely connected the podcast and coaching were. And I feel like a lot of the guests I have on my podcast are natural storytellers, right? They're willing to share the inspiration, the personal journeys, technique, physicality, whatever it is, they're willing to share all of that stuff. And they're really great at talking about their stories.
Because they get questions. Many of them wouldn't get in front of people and do exactly what you just said, talk about their art and materials and physicality. But you come up with wonderful questions that make artists open up and talk easily about their things. So it's your questions first.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'll take that. That's probably true. The other thing, though, do you ever notice if you go to an art opening or an art fair and you walk up to a booth and you ask somebody about their work, sometimes they're super engaging and sometimes they just look at you like deer in headlights and they don't know what to say and they look terrified and they're like, I don't know. I just don't you like my work? Like, do you want to buy something? And they don't have the confidence to talk about their work. They don't think, they feel super awkward. They don't think anyone would be interested. They're worried about sales. It's hot out. Their person across the alley from them is selling a bunch and they're not. I don't know. Whatever's happening is stopping them from sharing the excitement about their own work. That's what I saw happen in those kinds of situations. And what I wanted to do was say, oh my gosh, like, you've got this. Talk to me about. So I would ask them different sorts of questions until they got comfortable. And then they would open up and then they would talk a little bit more. And sometimes people don't at all, but that's kind of what I saw. People just feel uncertain about how to talk about their work. They don't know how to reach a larger audience. They get worried. They get uncomfortable when someone's like, what inspires you? They're like, I don't know. Like, what do they want to hear? And it's not so much about what does someone want to hear, but if you are authentically sharing what's inside of you, anyone is going to be engaged with that. You're going to create this emotional connection, right? And I noticed this happening with my guests. I mean, not all art is for all of us. We don't all want the things in our home, right? But I can still appreciate someone's work and their process and their place in the world. But what happened was I would interview someone, and at the beginning, I would think, I would never have that piece of work in my home. By the end of our conversation, I wanted something in my house from that person because there's context behind it.
Wow, that's great. Oh, yeah.
It makes me crazy to go into an exhibit and have a tiny little placard that says the name and the title and nothing else. Like, I get that you want to interpret it, that maybe artists want you to interpret the work on their own. But for me, I want some context. I want to know why you made it. I want to know what impact you hope to have. And it helps me appreciate the work. And now I want to buy a piece of work. So if I can help someone do that and get to that point, then, you know, that's awesome.
It's the main part of your coaching when artists come to you, or let's say when you observe that people have good art or make art, lots of art, put it out there and don't really flourish. Nothing really happens. Would you recommend them to what to have to change their mindset, to put their stories more out there? And if yes, how? Or, well, this is a huge question, I think.
It is a big question. And I think it's different for everybody, but, you know, the thread that winds its way through my coaching, to make this very meta, is that I think if you can figure out what your authentic obsession is, again, tangible, intangible, it could change over time. It doesn't matter. If you can think back to when you have been most engaged in a conversation with somebody or an email with someone, or it doesn't even have to be like a face-to-face conversation, but like, what excites you about sharing your work? When do you come most alive? Is it when you're teaching a small class? Is it when you're writing a blog and someone responds to it? Is it posting on Instagram? Is it talking at a cocktail party with someone you don't know? So figuring out how and what that felt like, and figuring out sort of how you best communicate, we kind of work around that. And I think that if you can figure out what your obsession is and how that winds its way through your work, you can talk about it to anyone with genuine excitement, and it'll create this emotional connection. I think I said that earlier. So, like, I think about, for me, what's one of mine? So I think about my quilts, and I think about why, what I create. I'm creating quilts. Why do I do it? I'm preserving some memories with my mom's clothing. It feels really great to me, the tactile feeling, right, of touching all that material and thinking about all the history of whoever wore those clothes. And the impact I hope to have is that I can show others that you don't have to play by the rules. Like, there's no one right way to do quilting. Like, you can do improvisational quilts that don't look perfect and people can really appreciate them. That's just a very small example. Or I do the podcast because I want to know how others keep showing up and getting through the hard times. And I want other creatives to know that they're not alone. And I want to create some connections and collaborations. So if I just talk about those, if I take that and create some stories around that while I'm talking about why I do the podcast and why you should be on it, I can probably convince you to be on my show because I'm talking about it from a genuine way. I'm not saying I'm trying to get 87,000 downloads and you have a lot of followers. And so I want you to be my guest. Like, that's not a compelling reason for someone to, in quotes, buy my work, say yes to being on the podcast. So we think about their obsession, their strengths, and their values. So a couple of my strengths are zest and enthusiasm and curiosity, love of learning, appreciation, beauty and excellence, social intelligence. And if you look at those things, it makes sense what I'm doing right now, right? So don't try and fight your natural instinct. Don't try and do the thing that you think others want you to do. Just be yourself. But people are so scared to be themselves.
But that makes me wonder a little bit if you talk about the authentic obsessions, people already, that sounds that people come to you that already have found their creative voices and they kind of know what excites them themselves. So they produce already art and something must be lacking. I can imagine that many of them lack sales or publicity. So you need to probably set goals also. But when you say now that they feel that they need to do what everyone else does, setting goals is sometimes very, very difficult because it's sometimes maybe very shameful for some artists to say, I want to sell my art because art and money is difficult, or I want to get into a gallery because that sounds too big for me. I guess what I'm trying to say is finding your own voice is probably before people come to you, or for everybody out there who listens and wants to take something away today. I think many people that listen to this podcast already do art, but they don't know how to continue now. I'm babbling, I feel. I'm trying to find...
You're not babbling.
What I'm trying to say.
Yeah, so here's the other thing. I think a lot of people that I'm in contact with think that if they increase their social media posts, they will sell more work, or there's some marketing course they came up with, or there's a marketing strategy, right? Or now I'm in an online membership group and that's really going to pump up my following and then I'm going to sell more work. And I think before you implement any marketing strategy, you have to build a solid foundation for your stories so that your messaging is genuine. And I find that there are many people I work with who selling work is not their main goal, which I find very interesting. So a lot of people have to sell work to maintain a living, right? To keep food on the table. A lot of people are selling their work, but they have other goals on top of that, right? They want to get into a residency. They want to collaborate with other artists for an exhibit, or they want to ignite some conversation or reaction around some social issue. They want to push people to act for some cause. Or they've made all this art and they just want some recognition and some appreciation, right? So everybody comes into this with different goals. If you want to get a residency, what does your application look like? Are you a good writer? Are you saying what you think they want to hear? Are you talking about the thing that is uniquely yours that makes you stand out, that would make someone accept you into that residency? So I help people with that piece of it get stronger and not shy away from the thing that makes them interesting and unique. And I just think about some of the things people keep to themselves that are so interesting and engaging. And like, the world needs to hear this because there are other people like you out there. And once, I don't know, I feel like I'm talking out of turn a little bit because I have exhibited before, but I'm not in that world like you are. And I know there's a lot of layers to getting accepted into an exhibit or a residency or a collaboration that I'm not aware of. And I'll fully admit that. But what I can do is help you get a very strong application together. And by application, you know, it could be a real application or just steps that you're taking to contact a gallery. Sometimes it's terrifying to contact a gallery, right?
Absolutely terrifying. And then you get a rejection and you get the next rejection and you apply for an exhibition and you get rejection after rejection. What would you suggest? How do you keep up trying? How do you find your strength?
I feel like what I've noticed is that you have to keep some momentum going, right? Because that builds your confidence. And if you become more confident, it's easier to talk about what you're doing. You're feeling less awkward and you can keep at it a little bit more. If you have a community of people who you can talk to about this, don't keep it to yourself. I feel like the worst thing you can do is like have it fester inside. There's no shame in getting rejected. There is shame. It feels shameful, right? You're embarrassed, you feel shame, but you did it. You can't have any regret about not doing it. It's the people who don't try who regret not trying because they think they probably would have gotten in if I just would have tried, or I never would have gotten in if I would have tried, but you don't know until you actually do the thing. So to have some accountability and some momentum, I think is helpful. For me, I know if I talk to someone every week about what I'm doing, I can keep it going. When I didn't do the podcast for 3 or 4 months in a row, it was really hard to get back. I was like, nobody wants to listen anymore. No one cares, blah, blah, blah. And then I would publish an episode and I'd get emails saying, thankfully you're back. I'm so happy you're back. This is great. And I'm like, really? Someone missed me? So we tell ourselves these stories. Is it true? Like, are the stories we're telling ourselves true? I think having a community is so important. And if it's one person or a group.
Networking, community. How do you find community if you're not living in the middle of Berlin or some other big city? How do you find a community when you're out and alone?
It's hard, right? Thankfully, there is social media. I have a love hate, right? Everyone does, I think. But I think about Instagram and how I'm not using it to get more downloads on my podcast, but I am using it and I love it for making connection and reaching out to someone. And it is rare that I send someone a message on Instagram and they don't respond. Mm-hmm. Artists are really kind and caring people. And especially if it's not public and you send someone a message, I have found that almost everybody responds. And then you get this little, it's a carrot, right? You get this little positive reinforcement that nothing terrible happened. What are they going to do? Like come to your house and I don't know, like no one knows where you live. You don't have to be worried about that, even though it feels scary. I think there's a lot of online groups, Facebook groups for free, or online membership groups that people join. I've been in a few of those and I've made some lifelong friends, I think. The other thing I've noticed is that you don't have to just connect with other artists, and you don't have to connect with other artists who are like you. So having some connection during the day, leaving your studio and going outside and going for a walk and seeing that same person when you're going for a walk every day, eventually you get to talking, you realize what each other does. You know, these are slow. It takes a long time to like reap the benefit of that a little bit, but.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. You don't only need some artist community with huge studios, but yeah, the neighbor with the dog can be very, very helpful. You mentioned galleries earlier, applications to galleries. How important do you think are galleries nowadays? You mentioned Instagram and other social media. How important is galleries today?
I don't feel like I am capable of answering that, really. I'm just not in that world. The thing I do know about galleries is that recently, this summer, my husband and I have been going on some artist dates on the weekend, which has been lovely. And we just sort of fell into an artist talk one day. And we went up to a museum a little ways from here, spent the day there. There was hardly anybody there. It was a beautiful day. Everyone was outside. It was a Saturday. Who's inside a art gallery? And there was an artist talk, and there were only about 15 people in it, and it was fantastic. I couldn't even believe it. I find value in artist talks at galleries because I get to hear that context I was talking about earlier, right? Or you can meet the curator, or you can meet someone who's, I don't know, working in the cafe there. Like, it's amazing the other jobs that artists do. Right? Not everyone is a full-time artist. They're everywhere. And so I feel like going to galleries is important. Showing up for people's exhibits are important. Making connections during those events is really great. In terms of, is it important for you to get your work into a gallery? I mean, that's a question I would ask you. Is it important for you to get your work in a gallery? Is that where people would see it? You're not selling your work on Instagram. You don't have that kind of the giant things that you do, right? The pieces that you do, they're so impactful and they need to be seen in person and up close and by a lot of people. So I feel like galleries are really important to you, aren't they?
I really don't know. I'm bad with Instagram. I think I haven't posted. I posted today, but I was quiet for 3-4 weeks. I don't know. I have sold through Instagram, but smaller work, yes. And I'm not sure about galleries. I really don't know. And also, I feel there are more and more artists out there, and galleries are more and more sick of getting applications. That keeps me from trying. Sometimes I think it makes a lot of sense. It would help me probably sell work. I would have more time doing art instead of doing marketing, and that's a lot of work. But on the other hand, you're not as free with a gallery. I can change my mind tomorrow and to do totally different work. Of course, there's always the 50% you have to give to the gallery. Not really. I don't know. I have no really clear thoughts on that. That's why I asked you.
You know, I'm curious about, maybe we could dig into this just for a minute. The difference between being represented by a gallery and being part of an exhibition at a gallery, because those are two very different things, right? Sometimes people in an exhibit are represented by the gallery, but I feel like more often than not, they're not.
It depends on the galleries. Some galleries wouldn't take guests.
When I am talking to an artist or a creator and I'm looking at the work that they're doing, my mind goes to what would this look like inside a large space where people could walk into, and how could you present your work, and who else could you collaborate with? And, oh, wouldn't it be great if, you know, you did this with this person and we saw not only your paintings, but we saw your sculptures because they complement each other. And I feel like those are the most interesting exhibits I've gone to. Sometimes I wish I owned an exhibit space because I can just imagine collaborations between all these different artists coming together. And do you feel like your CV has to be super pumped up to get accepted by a gallery? And they have very specific details that they're looking for?
I think that also depends on the gallery. I think some definitely do. They do check where have you shown your art before. Maybe they look at your international artist ranking on Art Facts, stuff like that, or on Net, on Artsy. And other galleries only look at your art and see if yeah, what is your art like? Is it good? Is it bad in their eyes? What would you say to an artist that continues to make art and puts it out there and nothing happens? No shows or only very little shows, very little sales. Nothing much happens. You as a coach for artists, would there be a point where you would say you need to change something in your art? Or would you always look at the business side of this, the business mind, the business effort? Or would you look at the technique, the material, the message? Would you try to change something? Or would you always say, I don't touch that at all?
Yeah, I don't touch that at all. I feel like what you are creating is what you want to create. I might ask you why you're doing it or how long you've done it or what does it feel like when you're doing it or why? Like, what's prompting you to create that work over and over again? What is driving you to do that? Like, I would be very curious about that.
But then what would you recommend? It doesn't only come down to mindset or to storytelling.
I think you're right. You're asking great questions. So once we go into the why are you doing it, like, why are you holding on to it? Maybe that's really the question, right? Why are you holding on to keep doing this? If you need to sell work, you're going to change what you're doing in order to sell it eventually. What are your goals? If someone is putting out work for 3 years and they're not selling anything, they obviously don't need to make money from that work or they would have changed something, right?
That's true.
If someone is putting out work because they feel so compelled to share this part of themselves and they feel like other people need to see it, one of the things we talk about is how do you expand your audience? So if you're looking to get into galleries, maybe there are other places where you could show your work. Anything from a local community center to a library to your friend's coffee shop. Because if sales aren't the most important thing and you want exposure, there are lots of places where you could show your work, right? Who are you trying to reach? What's the impact that you're trying to have? Where are those people?
Those are great questions.
Yeah, if you're trying to ignite social change, you can't just put your work in a high-end gallery where only a small amount of people are ever going to see it, right? So
wonderful. Great point.
Amy Putman, who I interviewed, has done a lot of work and showed her work all over New York City in some very unusual places. So, like, you can get really creative. She did a very controversial piece. You can go look it up. But she did a piece that became very controversial about immigration and the border in Mexico and the United States. It was in a storefront window in New York, and the people that walked by and saw it, I mean, everyone who walked by saw it. You couldn't not see it. It got a lot of press. It got written up. So interesting.
I think that's a wonderful idea that you check what is your message and which place would correspond with your message, and or even just the opposite. I remember an artist told me once, why don't you go sit in the middle of a train station of a huge city, Hamburg or Berlin or wherever, and sew snail shells onto canvas. People would be so surprised. And you talk to people and tell them why you do that, what you want to show them. And I thought,
yes,
such a great idea. I never did, but I just remembered. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Stephanie. Yeah. You could reach so many people with that.
That's a million times better than a high-end gallery. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Right. So all of that comes from figuring out what's inside of you and what message you're trying to share with people. Because even though people say, I'm an artist and I want my work to sell in galleries, or I want to sell a lot of work, there's some underlying reason why they're an artist. No one sets out to be an artist to make a good living. Let's face it, right?
True.
So there's something else that's driving you in there. It's already in there. What is it? Like, how do you take that and build like a, I don't know, like a solid foundation for talking about your work? I feel like storytelling is another one of those things that gets talked about all the time. You know, storytelling for creatives, storytelling for engineers, storytelling for scientists. Everyone has to tell their story in order to reach the audience that they want to. I worked at a university for a long time, and one of the things I ended up doing was I taught a science communication class to graduate students. And they were mostly terrified because these are students who are inside their lab, they're doing research. They're like, why do I have to tell anyone what I'm doing? I'm going to publish my research and there we go. But they also, this was all around like fresh water. And we want people to know what the water quality is, right? In their local environment, we want to change laws. They want to impact policy. You're never going to do that unless you get your work out into the world. And so teaching them how important it was to take your work, craft your messages to different audiences so that they could talk about it wherever they were, their grandmother. You never know who you're sitting next to on the train. You never know who's going to be at that party, right? And if you keep practicing and talking about it, you get better at it. And at some point, someone's going to grab one of those nuggets and say, oh my gosh, I know just the person we need to talk to. So networking, connecting with other people, you never know where it's going to lead. And it's not just for extroverts.
You can read my mind. I was just thinking, that sounds wonderful, and I agree 100%. But that sounds sometimes stressful, and you really have to push yourself. And I think that is all, that's very important. On the other hand, I think burnout is real for artists. You never have a free day in a way. You always have your head with you, and you're thinking of. And when you say the person next to you in the train might be the key to something, what would you recommend? How to keep the balance? Because you need to push yourself sometimes, but you also need to be gentle with yourself.
So one of the things I do with my clients, which I think is pretty great, after every session, I write a recap of what we've talked about, and there's usually some homework. It's things that they have said, oh, I should go do that. Oh, I'm going to go do this. Oh, that would be a good thing to work on this week. So I write down all those things, and then I want some accountability. So email me in a week and tell me that you sent out those two emails to people who are connected with galleries. You don't have to get on the phone. You don't even have to go in person. Do the thing that's most comfortable for you. And it's a slow process that you can work at your own pace. But once you see some progress, you're going to want to do it again, right? If you have some positive thing that happens, oh my gosh, that person got back to me and they said it wasn't right for now, but they suggested I go contact this person. So then next week, go contact that person. You don't have to do everything in a day. You know, this isn't a race.
But you're absolutely right. You get so much energy back when suddenly somebody answers and gives you a yes or refers you to somebody else. And that kind of closes the circle to the beginning where you said, keep the momentum going. Mm-hmm. Do it every Monday. Send it out. Is that something you would recommend?
Sure, absolutely. And whatever is most comfortable for you, you have to figure out your own timeline. What are your goals? How far is it going to take to get there? Or how long is it going to take to get there? What do you have to do in the middle to get there? So if in 6 months you want to have submitted 6 applications to residencies, work backwards. So first of all, where are you going to apply? Are there residencies that resonate with the type of work that you do? Of course, because they're not all for everyone, right? So it's a lot of research on the front end. And then it's, can I travel outside of the country? Can I, you know, so you have to narrow the window of your funnel, find out the places that you want to apply to, and then what does their application look like? Okay, how are you going to answer these 5 questions? Okay, dig into the first question. Go back and forth with me if you want some feedback. We do that. Do some research on what would make you a really great applicant for this. Like, we talk about that back and forth because sometimes it's so overwhelming. I just have to fill this out and send it in and then I'm going to cross my fingers, right? But if you really think about it and make sure you're answering the question that they're asking and not just plugging in your bio and, you know, normally. Check the grammar, check the, you know, are you repeating yourself? All of those little things. Needs a good editor to look at that. And so as you're backing up the timeline, okay, so this week I have to do these 3 things. There's all kinds of productivity apps out there and everyone has read probably, right? Some of these productivity and habit books, but it's good to say, on Mondays, I'm going to do this, or Tuesday is admin day, or Wednesday, I'm totally in my studio and no one's going to stop me from that.
That keeps the momentum going, as you said. Mm-hmm. But also, mm-hmm. if you say every Monday, you have a clear mind that Tuesday through Sunday, you don't need to do this. That maybe that makes you relax a little more when I think of being gentle with yourself.
I love that.
It's a huge field, and I would have a million more questions. But before I ask you, if you could tell our listeners 3 things that they can do. This episode comes out on a Friday, and the same day and on the weekend, 3 things they might tackle. But before I ask that, why do you think, why for you, is it important to help artists? Why is it artists you help? Why not, I don't know, journalists, people working with children, gardeners, whatever? Why is it artists?
No one has ever asked me that. That's such a great question. I feel like they're my people. I'm so interested in creativity. I'm so interested in how it affects someone's overall life, their happiness, their well-being, the things you can do to induce creativity. I think that for me, the arts are really important, and it gives, I want there to be more out there that I can look at and engage with because it helps me slow down in my life. All these workshops I've taken over the past couple decades, I see these, mostly women, but I see these people who are so self-deprecating about their own work. And they're like, oh, I'm not an artist. Oh, this isn't any good. And the way people talk to themselves is so sad to me. And I just feel like I can help people build some confidence. And it just helps their whole life and people around them, right? We know what creativity does to the brain and that it makes people more engaged and happier. And like, even though we struggle and it's really hard sometimes, you can't not do it, right? You wouldn't even think of doing anything else. And I think that creators are a special breed. Who's not a creator? It's so hard now, right? Everyone's creating something, it feels like. People in tech, doctors, I don't know. Was there a second part to your question?
Was there a second part?
Yeah. Did I miss something there?
No. I asked, why is it artists?
They make me smile.
Thank you. Now to the 3 points. Somebody who struggles, who says, I make art every day. I show it as much as I can, but nothing really happens. Would you have three little things they could do today or until Sunday?
What a great question. I guess I would say one thing that everyone can do is really, we talked about this, but think about your authentic obsession. Think about that thing that winds its way through your life, through your art that you can't stop talking about or thinking about or comes out somehow in your personal, your professional life, your creative practice, and really spend an hour like writing about it and thinking about it. And how did it manifest? Where did it come from? How does it show up? I'm going to call that number one. And number two, as you're thinking about that, think about why you're creating. Like, is there a story? I have a friend who works with old vintage maps and she paints on them. And she tells the story about how when she was in the fifth grade, Mr. Roberts always gave the kids a special treat from the drawer if they won the day's whatever. I don't know. So he, in his desk drawer, he had all of these, you know, little toys and stuff. And when when it was her turn and she got to choose something, there was one of those really old maps they used to have in classrooms that would pull down from the ceiling. Do you know what I'm talking about? They're like 5 feet long and 6 feet wide or something. She chose that in the fifth grade, brought it home with her, and has loved maps ever since. She's just had this like map fetish. But telling that story, I see you smiling at the story, right? Doesn't it make you want to know, oh my gosh, what does she do and where does she get her maps now? And how does she collect them? And do people send them to her? And so think about that for yourself, right? Like, is there some why? Like, what inspires you to create? And is there an impact that you hope to have? Are there reactions that you want people to have when they look at your work? Are you trying to change someone's behavior or mind? Are you trying to elicit joy in someone? Do you want someone to think about it? Do you want them to relax? Do you want the scientific community to look at your scientific illustrations of bugs? Whatever it is, right? What impact do you hope to have? And I do have a little tip for writing this stuff down, because sometimes if I sit in front of my computer and I'm like, okay, go, I just freeze and I blank out and I'm staring at my screen and I'm trying to write like a first draft of something and I can't get it out. So I use the dictate function on my Word document, or I go to my notes app on my phone and use the dictate function and I talk, I just speak it. And it's, you know, what Anne Lamott calls that shitty first draft. Like, it doesn't matter, but there's a lot less pressure to get it right. You don't have to autocorrect words. You don't have to like, should I have written that sentence? It's just all spilling out of you naturally. Alternatively, you could like talk to a friend, someone that you really trust, and ask them to record the conversation, and you just have this conversation with them, or have them take notes, have them ask you a couple questions like you're doing for me. And then I go, oh, right, I forgot about that. Like some, you'll have some aha moment probably in there. So instead of sitting, even sometimes journaling can be intimidating for someone. But I have to say that a pen or a pencil and writing things down by hand is a whole different thing that happens in the brain than typing on a computer. So if you can, use a pencil or a pen and write it down or talk.
I agree. But that's a great idea, though. Dictating. Yeah. That's the third one, right?
Sure. That's the third one. I mean, you know, maybe ask yourself what's getting in the way of, I don't know, just like what's getting in the way? Are you afraid? What are you afraid of if you're having some sort of blockage, right? You know, you're scared to put your work out there. Is it because you're afraid of what other people are thinking? Do you have a lot of self-doubt about the work that you're putting out there? Are you comparing yourself to other people? Like maybe do some noodling around and think about that a little bit. Like, what is it that's getting in your way?
That's a hard question. Very, very important, but very hard question. I even remember the first time I said in front of a group of people, friends, nice people, you know, not strangers. I said out loud, someday I would like to have an exhibition. And that night I didn't sleep because I felt so ashamed that I said something so big in front of other people. And I would not have been able to say, I think, why am I so afraid of saying that? That's why I ask you about shame. Is there shame around setting goals? Because for some people to say, I want to sell my art feels, they are ashamed that they have this wish inside of them. And I had that wish of showing my art someday. And I said it out loud. And I'm serious. I didn't sleep that night because I felt so stupid. Yeah. So I've been there. I know this feeling.
You know, shame really like rears its ugly head when we're afraid that people aren't going to like us, right? If they know too much about us, if they know where we come from, who we are, what we believe, what we're struggling with. And if you, I mean, a lot of people feel shame and fear, right, when talking about that. But if you are saying what you truly believe and you're not doing it, you're doing it from a place of, I guess, authenticity, right? Like it's really inside of you and you try this thing. Do you regret saying that or did you have shame saying that? Right?
That's interesting. The thing is, I knew it would be hard, but I wanted to say it out loud because I think something happens when you say things out loud. And there's something that changes in your brain and in your behavior. But I also believe there's something that energetically somehow changes somewhere. And I remember it was the beginning of May when I said that. Oh, and one of the friends said, oh, there's this beauty parlor. They put up sometimes art from people around here. Maybe I could ask her. And I said, well, that's very nice. Thank you. But I'm really thinking of having my place, my art in a nice place, in an artsy place. And that was the beginning of May that year. And in October, I had my art up in a beautiful place and in November again. And I still believe, had I not said that out loud, nothing would have, well, or it changed something saying it out loud. Yeah.
So it sounds like you don't have regret saying it. You had a little shame in the moment, which is natural, right? But if you never said it, you would have regret that you didn't try.
That's right. Right. That's right. That's what I had meant to say. Yeah, I forgot to answer.
Yeah.
But exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Shame is just natural. Everyone has it, and we can work on it.
We have to work on it. Yeah. Yeah. Margaret, I have a million other questions, but I think we need to stop now. But there are three final questions at Atelier Talk podcast. It's the either or section. I have never found a nice title for this section. So if anybody out there helps me someday, I would be very grateful. Either or section. And it always starts with the same question. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Oh, that was fast. You don't drink coffee at all?
Nope, I can't do caffeine in any way.
So tea is not black tea, it's herbal tea and fruits tea.
Yes. Yeah. So when I go to England, I can't really order tea. It's hard. Herbal tea is hard to come by. And ginger turmeric tea is very delicious.
Ocean or mountains?
Mountains. I love the water, but there's something about the trees and the mountains, and you usually get some water in the mountains. So I'll take the water in the mountains and the trees.
And then when you meet, when you see a lake, you go swimming in the.
Oh no, too cold.
Okay. Sofa or jogging shoes?
Wait, what was the first one?
The sofa, laying on the sofa.
Oh, I thought that's what you said. Oh, jogging shoes. I have a hard time sitting.
Really?
Yeah, I'm always moving.
And you do go jogging?
Walking. I walk fast. I hike, I go up and down this hill by Lake Michigan where I live, down to the lake and up. I try and do that. And it's this little nature preserve in the woods. And so there are wood chips on the path. So it's really nice. It's not concrete or anything. So I love doing that.
Beautiful. And you do this Nordic walking, the one with the sticks, or?
No, I just walk.
And I bet you have wonderful ideas while you walk through nature.
Yes, absolutely. Get outside.
Margaret, I love your podcast. I am very, very grateful that I have been able to meet you, that you still bring out the podcast. You mentioned a couple of times in this talk, art makes you calm down. And there's something to your podcast that calms me down. I listen very closely. You have beautiful questions, and I get to know the people through your questions, and it's intense and it's calming and it's interesting, and you make the world richer through your podcast. Thank you so much. And that you now moved into coaching and you pick out people, individuals, and help them to thrive and move on. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. I can't tell you how great this is, not only to see your face, because we send each other messages a lot, but it's really lovely to see you again. And I really wish your podcast was not only in German, because I've listened to every English one you've had, or everyone you've had that has been in English. So I appreciate those. And I, being on the other side of the microphone, was a little intimidating today, but you made it very easy. Thank you for letting me think about these questions and not telling me ahead of time, because you really provoked some things in me during this conversation. So I appreciate it. And you asked really great questions. And some of it was where my niche is, and it's very specific. Like, I don't coach artists on all the things. It feels almost like pre-work to me.
Yeah.
Like, you want to sell your work. You have these goals. Like, you work with me to do the pre-work, to build a solid foundation, to articulate your messages and figure out what it is you're trying to do. So it's like I'm making you go backwards, mm-hmm. and really think about what it is you're trying to do with the work that you're creating.
Yeah.
I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it, because just like I was saying, other people, my clients need some momentum and practice. For me, this is practice. So thank you for that. I hope your listeners get something out of this. So I really appreciate you.
I'm
thank you.
Absolutely sure. Thank you so much, Margaret. Thanks for being here. I really enjoyed this conversation with Margaret. Her approach to the artist's journey is one of authenticity and clarity, and I feel she has such a deep commitment to the artist's path, to helping artists find their own way. I think that Margaret has illuminated important aspects of our creative paths that often go unexamined, reminding us of the importance of understanding our why, of what keeps us going, and what has started us in the first place. She makes us go back and dig deep, and that's something I have forgotten for a while, I think. I hope this episode has sparked a deeper reflection in you, as it has in me, about what it truly means to live and work authentically as an artist. Before I come to the very last part of this episode with some more details and information, here comes an important message from my sponsor, Kunst Investments. Art being treated as an investment is nothing new, but when done right, it's about more than just money. As Manuel Koch from Kunst Investments puts it, the greatest return is the joy that art can bring. And he should know, with his unique blend of expertise as an art connoisseur, collector, and financial expert. That joy he talks about actually has three forms. First, there's the satisfaction of knowing that by buying art, you're supporting artists and showing them appreciation. As an artist myself, I can tell you how incredibly important this is, because those sales help us create the art we're passionate about. Second, there's the joy of having a beautiful piece that brightens and enriches your everyday life. And speaking of enrichment, the third point is that buying art can also be a fantastic investment opportunity. If you need tips or guidance on how to do that, check out www.kunst-investments.com. And be sure to follow Manuel Koch on Instagram at Kunst Investments. All the links are in the show notes. And one more note, the website is in German, but Manuel is bilingual, so just drop him a line. Back to Margaret Petrie. You can find more about Margaret on her two websites. One website is her podcast, www.authenticobsessions.com. And the other is her coaching website, which is www.margaretpetrie.com. Her Instagram handle is margaret.petrie, and her podcast is on Instagram, Authentic Obsessions. You find all these links, as well as pictures of Margaret and her art, and of course also the patchwork quilt she talked about at the beginning, on the Atelier Talk website, www.atelier-talk.com. If you want to listen to more podcast episodes in English, there are two. There is number 29, in which I talked to photographer Christina Nyborg on finding your own identity. And a very special one is also episode 46 with Daphne Cohn and the Art of Asking. And one last thing for today. I am not primarily a podcaster. First and foremost, I'm an artist. And as an artist, I am always on the lookout for great projects, possibilities for exhibiting my art, or maybe even a collaboration with a wonderful gallery. Please check out my work and contact me in case you have an interesting offer or an idea. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Atelier Talk. And until next time, keep seeking, keep creating, and above all, keep true to your artistic voice. And if you enjoyed it, please help me by giving me 5 stars on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to Atelier Talk. Thank you, and bye. Yours, Stephanie Hillman.